From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Happy Easter, everyone. I hope everyone is having a good Easter week and they had a good Easter Sunday. I know things are back to normal here in Chicago. We're covered in snow. And today, following Easter Sunday, is a big day for me personally. It's the 50th anniversary of my parents, and I just wanted to take the opportunity to wish them a very special day today on this anniversary of their marriage. And on the show coming up today, we've got a good one. We've got two guests talking about these cloths that exist after the resurrection of Christ. Of course, we're talking about the Shroud of Turin and the Sudarium, the face cloth of Jesus. We'll be joined by Chuck Neff, the executive producer of the film The Holy Winding Sheet, and also Dan Cheely, a church historian, to shed some light on that cloth from Spain. And these are two guys who I've known in my past, perhaps when I wore a different uniform, you might say. So it's good to reconnect with Chuck and Dan later in the show. And check out the next episode of They Might Be Saints. Rhoda Wise in Canton, Ohio. Rhoda Wise was known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles, one of them being experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica. I'll be relating her remarkable story, and that's on Wednesday, April 10th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And check out a new episode of my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, tonight on Saturday the 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We've got Explore Kildare. I'll be exploring the life of Ireland's most famous female saint, St. Bridget of Kildare, who is renowned as a miracle worker. So check that one out. You can go to explorewiththemiraclehunter.com for more information on that. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project. For today's day, we've got Mother Thrice Admirable from Ingolstadt in Germany in the year 1604. The might-be saint of the day is Blessed Maria Karlowska, who lived from 1865 to 1935 in Poland. And the question of the week, why was the Guadalupe image retouched? That's a hard one. I'm going to do my best to try to answer that one later in the program. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And perhaps this isn't a true miracle story, but when we talk about modern miracle-working saints, perhaps Padre Pio is the greatest in history, the Italian Capuchin, who is known to bear the wounds of Christ and bilocate and levitate and some incredible healing miracles through his intercession. And one of the things that many people don't know about Padre Pio is one of the aspects of his ministry is that he had a voluminous correspondence with people around the world. He wrote thousands and thousands of letters to people, imparting their encouragement, fatherly corrections, common sense spirituality, and of course, he had this intense personal relationship with Christ, and he shared that in those letters. And what's very interesting or exciting, you might say, is that there's this new project that's coming to us from the St. Padre Pio Foundation that it has released this epistolary. It's a collection of 365 letters written by St. Pio, known as Padre Pio, of course, to his spiritual directors and students. And a dedicated page on the foundation's website includes a sign-up form available at stpiofoundation.org/St. Pio's epistolary for receiving a weekly PDF with seven letters, one for each day of the given week. And the first batch of letters was sent out earlier this year in this foundation, which is based in New York. And these are freshly translated letters into English, never before seen from the original Italian. And so this represents only a fraction of the thousands and thousands of letters. But hopefully they continue this every year and they release new letters to the world. So I encourage people to sign up for this if you go to stpiofoundation.org for more information about these new letters being released in English. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question, give out a prize to an emailer that writes in with the fastest with the right answer. People who know me know I love pub trivia. You might find me at a bar on a random night playing pub trivia, but this is Catholic Pub Trivia. And people who write in with the fastest answer is going to win that prize, the image of the faces of Mary. And we're talking today about the view of Christ's passion. This was last week. We were talking last week about the medical view of Christ's passion. And the question is, what was the name used to describe the burial cloth of Christ before it was known as the Shroud of Turin? And the answer to that is it was called the Holy Winding Sheet. And that leads in perfect segue into today's interview with Chuck Neff. He is the creator of the film The Holy Winding Sheet. So later in the program today, he'll be explaining how that name came to be. Now, the question for this week, we're talking with Dan Cheely about the sudarium in Spain. That's the face cloth that was found in the tomb with Jesus after his death. And the question is, what Spanish city is said to be the holding place of the cup of Christ, the Holy Grail? So, of course, there are a couple of competing cups that are being considered to be the true cup of Christ, and maybe none of them really are. But there's a famous one in a Spanish city, and we're looking for the name of the Spanish city that is said to hold at least one of the candidates for the Holy Grail. And if you think you know that answer, want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you'll be the respondent with the right answer the fastest, and the answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Chuck Neff, the executive producer of the film The Holy Winding Sheet, about the Shroud of Turin. Stay with us for that.
Back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I hope everyone, all the listeners out there, had a wonderful Easter. I know here in Chicago we're covered in snow again, but good memories of good times with family and friends as we celebrated the resurrection of our Lord last week. And when we talk about the resurrection of Jesus, I think we have this persistent, ongoing reminder. People can actually see an object that helps us recall the passion and death of Christ in Turin in Italy. And it's currently known as the Shroud of Turin, as that's the resting place or the holding place of this purported burial cloth of Christ. But there's an incredible history that goes into where that cloth came from, and is it truly the burial cloth of Christ? There's a lot of evidence out there that suggests that it is, and perhaps the question of how it was made is the strongest argument of all. There's not a real solid theory of how this cloth was made, even with our modern technology and science able to come up with in all sorts of analysis. So I think it's an incredible object, perhaps in a chiropoeia or not made from human hands image that we have here in our world today. And so we're so excited to be joined again by Chuck Neff. He's the executive producer of this film called The Holy Winding Sheet, and he's with Salt River Productions. And this is a film that traces back the amazing history of this cloth that was once known as The Holy Winding Sheet. Welcome back to the show today, Chuck.
For having me. Pleasure to be with you again.
That's great to reconnect with you. And I think that even though Easter is behind us, this cloth, this Shroud of Turin, this Holy Winding Sheet is always with us. This is a persistent, constant reminder of the passion and death of Jesus Christ. And it's a mysterious object that we don't really know where it came from or how it came to be. There's lots of theories out there, but none has proven. We haven't been able to prove anything yet. How did you get interested in this project, the Holy Winding Sheet?
Well, I had always had, I don't know if devotion is the right word, but certainly a great interest, was always intrigued by the shroud. And then I started just hearing people talking about it, and it became very clear that there were a lot of people who had never heard of it, a lot of people who, if they had heard of it, didn't believe that it might be the burial cloth of Jesus. And so I just kind of had this idea, well, gosh, could we create something that would basically educate not a general audience, but educate a younger audience. So could we produce a documentary that would go into the Shroud and really do it for an audience of high school kids, seventh and eighth graders, but really a younger audience? And so I had the idea, well, let's don't get a bunch of white coats on here and talk about all of the scientific evidence and everything. What if we could come up with a way to do a program on the Shroud through the eyes of some high school students? So the initial idea was to get a group of high school kids together and let them do their own investigation and just kind of see what they came up with. And I approached, we live in the St. Louis area, and I approached a number of Catholic high schools in the St. Louis area to say, hey, would you work with us? And they said, oh, man, that's a great idea. Yeah, we'll really work with you. And then nobody would ever call me back. And so I had this idea for really a couple of years and then was over at a local high school on another project. And I would always get the question here in the St. Louis area, so what are you working on now, Chuck? And I said, well, and I realized that maybe this was the school. So I mentioned this to the teacher there, what we wanted to do. And she says, we'll do it. We will absolutely do this. Good. And so we had to do it through the eyes of basically it was a senior thesis through the eyes of one high school student. So we this young man named Parker Dowell, he spent the summer with us. And we took him, and he met all the experts. He did all of the interviews. He ended up doing the voiceover on it, and it was basically his research project. Obviously with the experts talking about it, and we put together the Holy Winding Sheet, and it's been very well received.
Wonderful. That's a great backstory. We're talking today with Chuck Neff, executive producer from Salt River Productions. We're talking about a film called The Holy Winding Sheet about the Shroud of Turin. And for people out there who hear this name, Holy Winding Sheet, I think there are plenty of people who have heard of the Shroud of Turin, but what is that name, the Holy Winding Sheet?
Well, I always ask the question. So it did not get to Turin until 1578. And the story I heard was that St. Charles Borromeo, the Cardinal Bishop of Milan, he worked with victims of the plague, and he ended up getting very, very sick, eventually died from that. But one of his last wishes was to be able to see the Shroud again before he died. Well, now it's in France, and they knew there was no way he was going to get across the Alps into France to see the Shroud. So they brought it to him. They brought it back to Turin in 1578, and it's been there ever since. So the question is, what was it called before it got to Turin? Well, it was called the Holy Winding Sheet. There's actually a feast day, May 4th, the Feast of the Holy Winding Sheet. So it came across the Alps in 1578. It's been in Turin ever since.
Absolutely amazing. We're talking with Chuck Neff today about this film, The Holy Winding Sheet, about the Shroud of Turin. And in your study of the Shroud of Turin, or the Holy Winding Sheet, however we might call it, what stuck out to you as far as hearing the interviews with the experts that were done for this program, or your own research into it? What stands out to you making this cloth well beyond a medieval forgery, something that we need to pay attention to?
Well, I always go back to the blood on the Shroud. There is actual human blood on the Shroud of Turin. And it's type AB. They were able to determine that. And what's so interesting to me is that when you go back and look at the Eucharistic miracles, and I go back to Lanciano in 750, and the miracle of priest didn't believe in the real presence of Christ, nice. And so the host actually turned to flesh and blood. So the blood type on the Eucharistic miracles worldwide, AB, the same that's found on the Shroud of Turin. When we were there in 2015 when it was on public display. We actually. In the program, we actually have the actual Shroud as part of the program on public display. So when you're close to it, it's hard to see. It's hard to see the image. But I stepped back in the back of the cathedral there in Turin, and now you can really see it. You can see the front and back sides of the body. You can see the Lord's head. You can see the wounds, and you can see all of that. Standing in the back of the cathedral, and I'm looking at this and realizing there's blood on the shroud, and this blood is the blood that Jesus Christ shed for us, for you, Michael, and for me, and for everybody listening today. The blood on the shroud of Turin is the blood that Jesus Christ shed on the cross.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Chuck Neff about the Shroud of Turin and his film, The Holy Winding Sheet. And I think that with the shroud, there's any number of things from a medical or scientific perspective that are fascinating, related to the pollen, perhaps, which traces all over through France and in the Holy Land, or the fact that the linen is has been recently identified as being without doubt from the Holy Land as its origin. So there's any number of things and related to the anatomy and the depiction of the body and the blood flow and all these things. And it seems when you add all those things up, it seems like it's a believable type of thing. But of course, we run into the carbon-14 testing from 1988. Talk a little bit about that testing, Chuck, and what that's done for sort of the belief in the shroud is this authentic shroud of Christ.
Yeah, well, I always say, why wouldn't you want to believe in this, first of all? But anyway, so let me see if I can paint the picture. So if you look at the shroud, and most of your audience will have seen it when it's, kind of horizontal, and the sample that was used in the carbon dating was taken from the very upper left-hand corner. Now, there are artist depictions of the shroud, and it was put on public display a lot in Turin. And the people would hold it up in the corners so people could see it. And so the sample was taken from the very upper left-hand corner as you're looking at it. And what they think happened was that because it got worn, there was a reweave. So there were some sisters back in the Middle Ages who basically went in and they believe reweaved that part of the shroud. So the carbon dating may be accurate in terms of the piece they actually took from the shroud. The experts will tell you this is the worst place they could have taken any sample to carbon date. So there's a lot of questions about that. The sample was not taken from that. They'd like to test it again and get a better sample. But that's kind of what's going on. So the sample was taken from the very upper, just a little bit of the corner on the upper left-hand side as you would look at the shroud today. So there's a lot of questions around that. And I think you get back to all of the scientific evidence and from the pollen, which pollen in the shroud traces back to only one place in the world, the Holy Land in the springtime. And there's just all sorts of other scientific evidence which points very directly to the Shroud of Turin as the burial cloth of Jesus. Russ Briolta has become a good friend over the years. He's one of the shroud experts that we have on the program. And he asked the question, which I always ask. First of all, there's no doubt there was a human body in this linen cloth. So if it's not the burial cloth of Jesus, what is it? And if the man in the shroud is not Jesus, who is it? And nobody can answer those questions.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Chuck Neff about the Shroud of Turin. And the big question for you, Chuck, is if this is truly the burial cloth of Christ, what does that mean?
Well, it means, the Lord is risen. Hallelujah. That's so we're celebrating. It's a witness to the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And for all of us who believe in the Lord, for all of us who, believe and trust in the teachings of the Catholic Church, the Shroud of Turin is just another gospel of what happened. Everything on the shroud points, it's in every gospel, the wounds, the scourging, the crown of thorns, everything we read in the gospels is seen on this piece of linen.
Absolutely amazing. And for people who want to find out more about you, Chuck, and your Salt River Productions and maybe your future projects, what's the best place where people can find out more?
Well, they could just go to Salt River Productions and saltriverproductions.com.
And to watch this program, The Holy Winding Sheet,
The Holy Winding Sheet, if somebody wants to watch it, just go do an internet search and put in The Holy Winding Sheet, and it should bring up a YouTube link to EWTN. And it's 48 minutes long, and you can look at it there. You can probably download it as well. And if that doesn't work, Michael, let everybody get a hold of you and give them my contact information, and I'll send them copies.
Sounds great. Well, we're so grateful to you, Chuck Neff, for putting together this this fascinating film, The Holy Winding Sheet, about the Shroud of Turin, and for joining us on today's program.
Well, Michael, a pleasure to talk with you again, and thanks. I'm flattered you would ask, and it's my pleasure to be with you and all of your listeners today.
God bless. And that was Chuck Neff, executive producer of Salt River Productions, talking to us about his film, The Holy Winding Sheet. As he mentioned, you can just Google that one, and you'll get a YouTube link, and you'll be able to watch that on your own to check out that film about the Shroud of Turin. We need to take a short break. But when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting questions via email, and I also like the question and answer sessions I get to do when I give a talk. I give something like 10 to 20 talks a year at different places around the country. And these days I've been speaking a lot about Eucharistic miracles during this time of Eucharistic revival from the U.S. Bishops' Conference. And so many parishes and shrines are inviting me to talk to shed some light on this great phenomenon of Eucharistic miracles. And for people who want to invite me, you can go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab, or just send me a message through my email that way. And then if you'd like to invite me, perhaps I'll be answering some questions at your parish coming soon. And so a question from Jimmy this week, he says, "Dear Miracle Hunter, why was the Guadalupe image retouched? Thank you, Jimmy." Now, this is a really hard question because I don't really know the answer. Of course, we look at the Guadalupe image as being one of the wonderful, not made from human hands images we have on this earth. We talk about the Shroud of Turin. We talk about the Guadalupe tilma. And we say this is a Kairapoita image, or not made from human hands. It's a divinely painted image, you might say. And so the question is for those people who receive, after they receive the tilma through St. Juan Diego in the year 1531 or thereabouts anyway, why was this image, if it was thought to be divinely created, why was it retouched? It's a good question, and nobody really knows the answer to that. So what are these retouchings that we're talking about anyway? We're talking about some very thick black lines that are put around the cloak of Mary in that image. We're talking about that angel who's holding up Mary from the bottom, from that cloud, perhaps, as it is, at the bottom. He's balding in the original image, and the retouchers decided to add some hair to him. Not sure why they did that. And there are some other additions that are made to the image itself, perhaps being seen as improvements. It's quite a bold thing to want to improve on a divine image, but that's what's done. And we might ask the question, why was it done this way? And perhaps in our modern day and in our culture, we have no sense of this, but perhaps this is a sign of love being shown to Mary in this image. She was also given a crown as well that's no longer there. So there were some additions and perhaps attempts at improvements of the image, but it's a really interesting question why it was ever retouched in the first place. So thank you, Jimmy, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe we'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. And we all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different other Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. And so for today's date, we've got Mother Thrice Admirable from Ingolstadt in Germany in the year 1604. And the story goes that in Ingolstadt in Germany on April 6, 1604, the Devotional Society Jesuit College of the Catholic University of Colloquium Marianum at the Jesuit College at the Catholic University was chanting the Litany of Loreto at the foot of a replica of the ancient icon Salus Populi Romani, the health of the Roman people. Father Jacob Rem, the creator of the ancient of the group, he experienced an apparition of the Mother of God who told him that Mater Admirabilis was her Mater Admirabilis, who told him that Mater Admirabilis was her favorite title from the litany. And when the singing reached that invocation, she disappeared. And Father Rem asked the cantor to repeat it twice more. And the practice of the colloquium repeating it three times in the litany became standard when the reason for the original repetition was revealed. And the icon was called Mother Thrice Admirable. And that is the Mother Thrice Admirable icon from Ingolstadt in Germany in the year 1604. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book, or you can download the free app, 365 Days with Mary, Marian Calendar, available from the Apple App Store. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week, and we talk about those people on the path to sainthood. And, of course, this connects with my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs on EWTN on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and also my book of the same title, They Might Be Saints, which is available at EWTNRC.com. And so we always like to keep you up to date with those saints coming down the pipeline, as you might say. This past month, the Holy Father received an audience, Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized this Dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Ante Tomicic. He's a professed layman of the Order of Friars Minor, Capuchin, born in 1901 in Croatia, and he died in Croatia on November 25th. 1981. And he, according to the Dicastery website, he was a professed layman of the Order of the Friars Minor Capuchin. Many of him remember the intensity of his prayer, especially in pausing in adoration before the Eucharist and after the advent of communism, wearing religious signs in public often provoked ridicule and hostility. But he never took off his habit, and he suffered public insults, and he faced daily difficulties with fortitude and trust in the Lord. And he was moved by an unshakable hope that he brought all his work to completion, because everything is in God's hands. And so that is the saint, future saint anyway, according to Sainthood News. And with one miracle, Ante Tomicic will go to become a blessed. With two miracles, we'll see him as Saint Ante Tomicic. So that's the new saints coming down the pipeline. Now let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day. We do this as well every week, where we find the person who's feast day or death anniversary lines up exactly to a day's date. So for today, we've got Blessed Maria Karlowska, who lived from 1865 to 1935 in Poland. And she was born on September 4th, 1865 in Karlow, in Poland. And she was born into a large family and a very pious family. Maria was in her teens when she was orphaned and became an apprentice seamstress in Berlin, in Germany. She always had a devotion to the Sacred Heart, and she developed a ministry to the sick in the city. She became a nun and was the founder of the Sisters of the Divine Shepherd of Divine Providence, also known as the Congregation of the Good Shepherd of the Divine Providence, or the Good Shepherd Sisters. And on September 8th, the sister of 1896, the sisters worked for the moral and social rehabilitation of people in that city, care for those suffering from venereal diseases. And she worked mainly in Plock in Pomerania, which is part of Poland, as well as Lublin and other cities there in Poland. Maria died on March 24, 1935 in Poland of natural causes. She was declared venerable by Pope John Paul II in a decree of heroic virtue on July 11, 1995. And by the same Pope John Paul II, she was beatified on June 6, 1997. with one more miracle, Blessed Maria Karlowska will go on to become Saint Maria Karlowska. And for more information on They Might Be Saints, you can go to theymightbesaints.com to find out about any of these saints on their way, as well as new episodes airing on EWTN coming up on the 10th of April at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. They Might Be Saints' Rhoda Wise is coming up. In Canton, Ohio, Rhoda Wise was well known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles, one of them experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica. And I'll be relating her remarkable story. So check that one out. They Might Be Saints on Wednesday, April 10th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with church historian Dan Cheely about the Sudarium of Oviedo. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We talked earlier on this program about the Shroud of Turin, the purported burial cloth of Christ. Of course, all the evidence points to that being the true burial cloth of Christ. But there's another piece of evidence out there, or at least a piece of cloth, that supplies its own evidence that might show that the shroud is, in fact, that authentic cloth that we're all thinking and hoping it might be. And that object, as we're talking about, is the Sudarium of Oviedo. It's a piece of cloth that's about 30 by 20 inches, and it's kept in this church in Spain. And it's thought that this was the cloth that was wrapped around the head of Jesus after he died, as described in John chapter 20. So I think that it's fascinating because we might see some correspondence between the two cloths, and if they do match up, being countries away, wouldn't that be interesting? Wouldn't that lend something to the push for authenticity when we talk about these two amazing relics? Well, we're so excited today to be joined again by church historian Dan Cheely. He's one of our favorite guests joining us on the show to shed some light on the Sudarium of Oviedo. Welcome back to the program today, Dan.
It's always good to be with you, Michael.
Yeah, happy Easter, Dan. And of course,
same to you.
After Easter, and for always, we have these relics to think about. We have Easter behind us in some way, or we're in the middle of Eastertide, you might say. But we have the Shroud of Turin. We have this object called the Sudarium of Oviedo that people can go to see, actually, or they know where it is, I should say, at the very least. But most people know the name, the Shroud of Turin, but they don't know the Sudarium. What is this object?
Well, this is a cloth. It's a linen cloth made in the kind of the characteristic weave that they used, you know, back in the first century. It's different from the Shroud of Turin in that it's, first of all, much smaller. Second of all, it is unlike the shroud, which has these very strange impressions on it, formed in the nature of almost like burn marks that form that when taken in a negative, they have a quality of a photographic negative. This has no image like that on it. It is kind of an unlikely relic when you think about it, because although it is a very primitive, although well done, piece of linen, it is it's basically got blood and bodily fluids on it. It doesn't have the kind of the projection of a face as such on it. It just has a series of materials that they now, because of the shroud, have studied extensively. This particular relic was pretty much forgotten, almost sort of forgotten about. It was outside of Spain. Even people that lived in northern Spain sort of knew it was there, but didn't really know exactly what it was until the tremendous research on the shroud had experts take a look at this thing to see if there were any how it related to what was on the shroud and what comparing and contrasting the pattern formed by the blood stains on this, and there are indeed blood stains on both the Shroud and on the Sudarium of Toledo. And looking at them both from a chemical standpoint and also from a photographic standpoint, a size standpoint, and see what they found. And they found an amazing, absolutely amazing correlation. This sudarium face cloth, I guess is the best way to describe it, was thought to have been placed over Christ's head or the body's head, before it was actually put into the tomb. It was a mark of respect, like just like how we now today, when there's a dead body, we cover them up. It's just as a mark of respect. It's very ancient. Well, they did this back then too, because the face would be contorted in pain and so forth, and just to pay respect to the deceased, they would do this. And from what they can gather, the scientists who have looked at this, they've had several international conferences on this, loaded with experts to try to analyze this thing. They find lung fluid in there, which is completely consistent with the idea that whoever was covered by this thing had asphyxiated, and his lungs filled up with fluid because he couldn't breathe, and also blood. And the pattern of the it goes on both the front and the back of the head. There are 70 points of convergence with the blood stains on the Shroud of Turin and the blood stains that are this, the exact same pattern, the exact same size, and 50 points of conversion on the back. So this is somewhat uncanny, and it's the interesting thing about the sudarium is that unlike the Shroud, which is the whole its whole pedigree is a little bit unknown before the 1300s. This pedigree certainly goes back all the way to 718, where there are certain records of it that were kept in Spain, and other references to it that go back all the way to perhaps the 500s in the Holy Land. Oblique references to it, but nevertheless some references to it.
And so, that's what I wanted to ask you a little bit about this, the provenance of this image, the chain of custody. Has there been a tradition dating all the way back to the 600s or even earlier that this specific cloth is in fact this sudarium or this sweat cloth of Christ?
Well, here's what we have. We know from early records that there was something called the Ark of Christ that was kept in Jerusalem. And this is kind of an interesting thing, too. Remember from history that the first bishops of Jerusalem for a while, what they did for both the first and second bishops of Jerusalem, were people who were from the blood family of Jesus Christ. Okay, they were, the James, the cousin of our Lord, called in the Bible the brother of the Lord. He was the first bishop, and then Saint Simeon was the next bishop after him. They were both cousins of Christ, and for a while they, the Dominical family, the family of Jesus Christ, was they held together in Jerusalem. They stayed in Jerusalem. And the thought would be that they had, from the holy women, from maybe from Our Lady herself, collected certain items that were treasured by the early church that actually still continued to meet all the way until past the time of Constantine in the Upper Rome. I mean, that was indeed the first Christian church. And these treasures, these memorabilia of Christ, were kept. Justin Martyr refers to things that were tables and chairs that were made by Jesus Christ that were treasured and kept in families in Galilee. Now, those are gone. Okay, nobody claims that they're around. But interestingly enough, the Shroud itself was probably sent to this city of Edessa at the request of King Abgar, who had heard of Christ and wanted to be healed by Christ. He was asking Christ for healing. And as the story goes, Thaddeus, either the apostle Thaddeus or a disciple with the same name, brought this image of Christ, this miraculous image, to Abgar, and Abgar was cured. Okay, so that probably ended up, that was probably the shroud that got separated from the memorabilia, but the face cloth remained, and it remained until the 600s when there was an absolutely horrific defeat of the Byzantines by the Persian Empire. The Persians were extremely antagonistic to the religion of the Byzantines, and they sacked and destroyed, actually they destroyed more churches and ancient shrines than the Muslims did. And out of refugees, safely, you know, brought the Holy Ark containing a number of these items, including the face cloth of Jesus Christ, first to Egypt, then across North Africa, and trying to get away from the invading hordes, where they would be safe and sound, to Spain, you know, where apparently it remains to this day.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Dan Cheely, church historian, about the Sudarium of Oviedo, this mysterious face cloth or sweat cloth that's found that is said to correspond with the Shroud of Turin. Now, you touched on some of these points of correspondence already, Dan, but talk a little bit, if you would, about what do we know is similar and what's different between this cloth and the Shroud. Of course, one is a smaller, almost square mm-hmm. object, the Sudarium, and the other is a longer winding sheet, you might say. So they're very different in that way. What about the materials that they're made from, or the bloodstains? How much correspondence are we really talking about here?
Well, they're different pieces of cloth. Okay, they both are made of fine linen, but the Sudarium has a they both have ancient weaves that have been traced back to the Roman Empire times. But they are different pieces of cloth. It's not like they cut part of the shroud off and used it as a Sudarium. It's a separate cloth. They're the same in that they're both linen, but they're different that they're different pieces of linen. The shroud has these mysterious images that nobody knows how they're formed. They seem to be very similar to burn marks. And the Sudarium does not have that kind of an image on it. It just has blood and water and edemic stains that are on it. Now, these stains, though, that are on it, I mean, in a way, if you know, it's not. It certainly would never pass muster in a in a puritanical environment. You know, it's bodily. You know, it's blood and bodily fluids that are on this this thing, but they correspond to perfectly to where the nostrils would be, to where the mouth is. Across the head. So, in a certain sense, even though you don't have this mysterious image that you have on the shroud, you have what would have come from a head of that exact shape and size and the wounds of the same dimension on these two separate, independent pieces of linen.
Yeah, truly amazing. And I think that if they ever do open up the Shroud of Turin for further study, of course, following that 1988 carbon 14 testing, I think the church has felt a little burned by opening that up to testing. But if they do, again, if Pope Francis ever authorized this or the next pope did, it seems that the Sudarium would be another object to test at the exact same time to continue this correspondence.
Well, here's the thing. Carbon 14, we now see that was the gold standard, so to speak, for a while. Okay. But we've come a long way scientifically since then. It's sort of like maybe a dowsing stick was something good for finding underground materials 200 years ago. But we've come a long way since then. We got a lot better things than dowsing sticks now to find buried metal or whatever it might be. And they now know that because it is a carbon test, if there is a infusion of carbon, for example, caused by a fire, it's going to screw up the test something royally. And that, so like they've even found mummies that we know exactly who the person is in the mummy, because the mummies were provided with, you know, documentation that was inside the mummy cases and so forth, who they are, and talking about the period, the pharaoh that was ruling and so on and so forth. And meanwhile, carbon-14 tests date these date the linen that's surrounding the mummy to 1,000 years later. So now, but all of those had been contaminated by other carbon infusions, and both the Oviedo Sudarium had been involved during the uprisings during the Spanish Civil War and preceding that, and church burnings and so forth, where there would have been a large amount of carbon and smoke deposited in the area, and the Shroud of Turin was involved in several fires. Okay, that's one thing. And then there are other factors too with respect to repairs made to the Shroud of Turin later by the nuns to repair some of the burn marks, putting in different kinds of thread that were in precisely the time of the areas of the shroud that were sampled. So, there's rather, I think, something that's even more interesting is pollen tests that have been done on both of these items, these relics. Now, from forensic studies for trying to place people in the scene of the crime and so forth, they're able to analyze small elements of pollen that are on cloth materials to tell where exactly this cloth has been. And very interestingly enough, each of these cloths have a very interesting pedigree shown by the pollen tests that have been done on both of them, by especially Dr. Max Frei, F-R-E-I. They found items that were only found in Palestine on both of those, in very way thorny items, I might add, as well. Okay, and meanwhile, on the shroud, they find things that date, that also are traced to the area of Turkey, Edessa, where it was for hundreds of years, then Constantinople, and finally France. Well, none of those, except for the spiky, thorny pollen items, are on the Sudarium of Toledo, but they also find Sudarium of Oviedo, they also find on the Sudarium North African pollens and Spanish pollen. So, it's interesting. There is evidence that this thing at some time was in an area where plants that only grow in the Holy Land are on this thing. And also the history that was written down about this probably in the 1000s, it seems to be borne out by the pollen count.
Absolutely, and it's something that's completely unfakeable. The people at the time would have had no idea.
Have no idea.
So a hoax is completely impossible at that point. So it's absolutely amazing, this Sudarium of Oviedo and its correspondence with the Shroud of Turin. It certainly is eye-opening, and I hope that the studies continue on this. Well, we're so grateful to you, Dan Cheely, church historian, for talking to us about this remarkable, mysterious cloth, the Sudarium, and also about a little bit about the Shroud of Turin as well, and piecing those two together. And when you look at these things, Dan, what does it do for your faith to see such things that science can validate in some ways?
Well, what it does, it shows me that there's something here that is outside of this world. First of all, there's the mythology that the communists and others have wanted to say, well, we don't really know that Jesus ever existed, that he was just a myth, that all these stories are just stories made to invent a kind of divine Paul Bunyan type figure that that we can control people with. Well, guess what? Okay, that is pure propaganda. But this knocks that into a cocked hat. Okay, Jesus, there really was a Jesus Christ, and it looks like his execution was exactly as described in the New Testament. Secondly, Jesus was something far more than a mere man. the phenomena that attach to these very mysterious items, have to come from a source that's beyond this world that we don't know. Similarly, there's other things like this, like the image of Guadalupe, for example, mm-hmm. is also in this category. There are things that are beyond the material that nevertheless impact upon our material world. And I think it's sort of like a steeple. It points upward. And I think that's encouraging to all of us during this Easter season.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dan Cheely, for joining us on today's program and for talking to us about some of these mysteries of our faith, including the Sudarium of Oviedo. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
Glad to be with you.
God bless. That was Dan Cheely, church historian, talking to us about this incredible Shroud of Turin and the Sudarium of Oviedo. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Chuck Neff, talking to us about the Holy Winding Sheet, and church historian Dan Cheely talking to us about the Sudarium of Oviedo. Check out my next episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter tonight. I travel to Kildare. It'll be an exploration of the life of Ireland's most famous female saint, St. Bridget of Kildare, who was renowned as a miracle worker. That's tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.